This is the first contact interview with Rebecca August, 90-year-old trade unionist. The interview took place on January 29, 1973, in her room at the Jewish Home for the Aged in Boyle Heights. Her room is quite small, containing only a bed and dresser, with many photographs, plaques, etc. on the walls, as well as some of her own drawings. Rebecca August is a 90-year-old, rather healthy-seeming woman, though she walks with a cane and is somewhat bent over. Her spirits are very good, and it seems apparent that what keeps her going is her own sense of the role she played in various events. She very much has a sense of history and of her own history and importance. She seems to want to focus a great deal on her more recent involvements and frequently alludes to all the recent honors she has been given, recognition, etc. These are very important to her, and, as mentioned, seem to be what keeps her going. She's still a very active woman, involved in the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, apparently on the council of the home there, and still fighting for the rights of the people who live in the home, as well as active involvement in the Retirees Club of the Amalgamated. This was a general interview which covered her early years and went up to the present. She repeatedly returned to the period since her retirement. Throughout the interview is the background roar of traffic.
Now I came to America in 1904.
How old were you then?
I was a little over 20 years. I was born in 1883. And I was an immigrant. My father took out citizen papers, but I wasn't included because I was past 20.
Now, were you working in Russia before you left?
In London, I worked.
How long did they stay in London?
In London, when my folks came to London, I was about 7 years old, and I had to help my mother. My mother had a lot of children, and I was the oldest, and I had to help her do things and all that, and go out and do shopping. And the Board of Education, some of the Board of Education saw me. I was almost as tall as I am now. Saw me walking around the street where I should be in school. And they came to my parents and said, I must go to school. So, all right, I started school at 9, and I went the first in the kindergarten and as far as the third grade. And being that we had no birth certificates, my father went and school age was from till 14. He couldn't quit until 14, that was the school age then. So my father went in court and swore that I was 14, that I was 12. And that's when I started to work. When I was 12 years old, I started to work in London. Worked long, long, long hours, many hours. Well, anyway.
What did you work as?
A tailoring.
Were you apprenticing at that time then?
What?
Were you an apprentice then?
Well, I was an apprentice for a while, but then my father was a tailor and he taught me a lot of things.
Did you work for him?
Well, no, I worked with private firms and there was no limited time. You could work 7 days a week and you could work all night and there was no limited time. And there was no limit, I mean, how little they could pay him. Very little.
Were these small shops?
Well, anyway, then we came to London. My father came to America and then sent for me and my brother. And When I came here, I started in 1904. I started to work in Hart, Scheffner and Marx.
In New York?
A big shop in London and Chicago. And then the conditions were also very bad. We had worked long hours and made very little money. And then we talked about trying to organize unions.
And Jane Addams, at that time, she was very active in helping people become organizing unions because the working people were terribly exploited, you see. And I worked with her 1905 on.
You were at the Hull House?
Yeah. I found her work. I'd come down there in the evening after my work. I'd come down there Sunday. And she used to send me out because I could talk a little, you know, English and talk Yiddish. So she sent me out to the Jewish people, because it was Jewish people who exploited them very much. She sent me out to the some of these Jewish women. They were organizing them, the bakers and cigar makers. She said, go to these women and tell them to try and encourage men to go out on strike, picket. Well, you know, some of the women wouldn't, they said, even if my husband makes $1 a week, it's better than nothing, because if go out on strike, women are available. Well, I had to go back and tell Miss Jane Addams about what he said, and then she told me what to go back and tell him. And she says, she told me, behind every great woman is a great, behind every great man is a great woman. So the women should be great enough, big enough, to see that their men go out on strike, and so they can increase their wages. Well, and so on, and so I worked with her right along. She was in a parade going out on a strike from Hart, Scheffner and Marx. And she was on the parade, we were in a parade down on Michigan Avenue. And the police put the hose on us in winter time, and we came back with our sequins hanging down.
Now, at this time, this is when, before the ILGWU or the Amalgamated was born.
Yeah, before, because, see, she was the one that helped the Amalgamated. But officially, Amalgamated was recognized in 1915, officially. But we did have some strikes and some signed up small shops, you see.
Now, were you then affiliated with the United Garment Workers at that time then?
No, I wasn't affiliated with anyone. I really worked on my own.
Was the Hart, Scheffner and Marx became unionized fairly early though, didn't
they? Yeah, 1915.
Oh, not until then?
No. But then, of course, I was boycotted because I was a striker, and I couldn't work here and I couldn't work there. And I worked a day or two in a shop, and they found out I was a striker, they fired me.
So where were you working during this period of time then? How long did you stay at Hart, Scheffner and Marx?
Not very long, because they fired me. That was even before the union was organized, they fired me. Well, so then I went to Seattle, Washington, and there at that time we had the 48-hour law was established for women. If you know the history, the 48-hour law for women, work law, you know, and I saw, I sat in the shop, and the women would get up after 8 hours work in the day, and men would stay another 2 hours. I couldn't take it. It was too much for me. So I went to the union there in Seattle, the Labor Temple. I was active there too, very active. And I told them that what we'd like to have, and they said, well, no, that also has to come through law. I said, no, I said, most laws come through the man of the people. And so so I went, the IWW was very active there at that time.
When was it? This was before 1920 then, still.
Oh, yeah, this was in 1912.
That you went to Seattle?
Yeah. And so I went to the IWW,
and asked them if they could help us picket these shops that for the men, that the men too should have 48 hours. And we did, and of course I was arrested for picketing.
Was that your first arrest?
I was arrested in Seattle once before, but this was my second arrest. I was arrested in Chicago. But here in Seattle, Washington, I was arrested for picketing at a shop, one of the shops. And I went up to talk to one of the women that was going on strike, strike breaker. And she had a big purse and she went and she hit me on the head. And cut my head open, of course. And so they had to arrest me and take me to the county jail. And I had some stitches put in my head, and that was it. And then after that, I went out again. Mr. Strike. Well, it seems they couldn't stop me. I even helped organize the carmen, the strikers. We went down from the temple, and when the cars went by, I got on the car and got off the trolley. But then they had a trolley and say, "Come on, come in and get organized, unionized." So they say they couldn't stop me. Even the mayor of the city came to me and says, why do you want to keep interfering with the big labor? Why do you want to interfere with the capital? They said so. Anyway, so then I was arrested as an immigrant.
So you didn't, your father had citizenship, but you didn't have citizenship.
I came in, I was already past the age, so I had to take out my own citizenship. Well, I was still an immigrant. So they arrested me and put me in the immigration prison jail. And of course, that case had to go to Washington, D.C.
Now, what year was that approximately?
That was in 1912. So, in 1912, when the immigration office there, the marshal examined you. And this the stenographer sits there and takes notes. And he says to me, "Don't you know that these people's capital is invested? Well, why do I interfere in the strike? The capital is invested." I says, "Yes, but our labor is invested." He couldn't answer. He had nothing to me. Then he said, "Well, you were brought in and said I was arrested on a framed up charge." He says, "And you was brought into this country for immoral purposes." I says, "Immoral purposes?" I said, "Look, I've been working. I'm working for a living, that's why I'm arrested." And then I says, "I came in this country in 1904. My husband, whom I didn't know then, came in 1906. So how could I have been brought in on the immoral purposes?" So the marshal turned around to the stenographer, his secretary, and says, "What are we keeping this woman here for? She ought to be in the White House." See? So anyway, I was kept there 6 weeks because the case had to go to the White House, and then I was exonerated.
Now, when did you marry?
Huh?
When did you get married?
Well, I tell you, this is something that I really found myself. We, in the state of Washington, they had a common law marriage. You know, when that thing's come. So we lived under the common law marriage. And there was many great children came out of common law marriages, you see. And, that was my first husband. But then I met my second husband, I happened to be reading the letter.
Now, was your first husband involved in the labor movement too?
Yes. And then my first husband, he went up to Alaska. I was in Alaska too. In 1911, I was in Alaska. And he had a restaurant there. He worked. But I couldn't stand the climate. It was too damp. so I came back here. Meanwhile, I became pregnant, and I had my son in 1912. So, and he died up in Alaska. See? So that was it. But my second husband I married in 1960.
So you stayed in Seattle for how long then?
I stayed in Seattle until, 1918, I think. Then we came back to Los Angeles.
Now, did you, when you were in Seattle, were you working in the needle trade yourself?
Oh, yes. I worked all the time, right along in the needle trade. And I have a book here. I don't know if you know anything about it. This is part of my life. All of these things, people are marked off, and everything's marked off that I went through. See? The whole thing, and they, I wrote to the author, he says, had I been in Seattle when he was making research work, I would be on every page.
May I borrow this from you and bring it back next time?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
And you can read
there's
that.
Another woman?
I this book was given to me by my children. They know a little bit my history. And it was got lost. So I wrote to him and told him I lost the book. So that's when he sent me another one, and that's how he autographed it.
So you, when you were in Seattle, were there any unions in the needle trades yet?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And what were they? Were they part of the AFL or were they part of the
Wobbler? It was the Garment Workers Union, they called it. It's the Garment Workers Union. And then after that, it became the Amalgamated, you see. But I was very, very active in with the Wobblers. I did a demonstration with, Hayward and with... with all of them.
So you stayed involved with the Wobblies the whole time you were there?
Yeah, I was involved, yeah.
Now, the Wobblies weren't on the West Coast, weren't involved in the needle trades too much, though, were they?
No, they weren't involved in the in lumber.
Industrial work.
Lumber.
Now, were you actively going to non-union needle trade shops, or were you in union shops, and then you were organizing for other unions?
Yeah, a lot of shops.
Were you organizing other needle trades?
Yeah, we were organizing every day. It doesn't matter where, what stage it was, we tried to organize them, you see. But I usually worked on my own. I wasn't paid for it. I didn't get paid for anything. But when I saw, like I say, the comment, we talked about organizing the carmen, you know, they had trolleys in. So I get up on the car and pull down the trolley and says, come on into the union. It's a labor, there's a picture there of the labor camp. I says, come on in, get organized.
Now everyone, all the different unions that worked out the labor temple then?
Most of them, yes.
The Wobblies too, or just the AFL?
No, the Wobblies were very kind, and they were in good nature.
Now, when you would organize, would you go to a non-union shop and work and try and get the other
yes,
people?
I did, and a lot of times I was fired because of that. I said, we don't want those strikers. My father was, in Chicago, no, in William. When was it? In Seattle, I think it was, yeah. They tried to cut the wages because we were all, that was already in the shop, one of the house shop and mark shop or whatever. And they were giving so much and so much for buttonholes. And they thought we were making too much money, so they tried to cut the price. And I didn't know much about, you know. So we went and we talked about to the girls about we were going to take it. So some of the girls said that I was the one to talk, and so I was fired. And my father was working there too. My father was a tailor, so I fired him. He said they didn't want the father of a strike in Russia. So you see, indirectly. So on.
Were your parents radical? Did you come from a radical background?
You will read my biography and know that they were...
Were they Orthodox?
Yes, Orthodox. Very, very even my father didn't know how to write. Only as a Jewish child, you know, they have to know how to read the Hebrew when they get the Bar Mitzvah. Are you Jewish? So, and my father said, Amidl, that doesn't have to know anything because she doesn't have to be the Bar Mitzvah. So I didn't know anything, I didn't know nothing. And until I came to London, and I learned in school how to write. When I went into the in the school, in the kindergarten, the children, the teachers talked about the cat or fat or mat. I didn't know what it was. So she had to draw a picture what the cat is or what the mat is, so I should know what it is. And that's the way I learned, you see. And my father didn't know how to write. My mother didn't know anything, very well. And we had a teacher, because at that time in Chicago, they had, more like here, all the buses and the streetcars had numbers. And she had to go to the market, get on the car. So I had to show her, teacher, 1, 2, 3, 4. To know the numbers, but my father, he didn't know anything, nothing.
So you were brought up in an Orthodox household?
Oh, very Orthodox.
Well, where do you think your radicalism came from?
Well, I don't know if there's such a thing as psychology or inheritance. My mother, ignorantly, was a philosopher. My mother had a philosophical mind. You see? The things that she told us, and the things that she would say to us, was philosophical. And then, of course, I suppose rebellion came from the conditions that I saw when made me rebellious. And I've been around, obviously. I have a book, you know, Nancy Reeves? I got a book of hers.
When would you say that you started becoming a rebel? In England still? Or not
till
you came to
New York? Well, in England, I didn't know. I didn't know anything about it. I knew that they had to work, and that's all. But when I came to Chicago, and I saw the conditions, that's when the revolt came on. I thought, how are the people when they say that? Their capital university, but our labor, look how we worked so hard, and the hours we put in and everything, what did we get for nothing?
Now, when you came to the United States, you immediately went to a big shop then to work, didn't you? You weren't in small shops.
No, I went to a hard shop in the Marks, and then other shops that fired me around from one place to another, and I couldn't work in the big shops because I was boycotted. A blacklist. And they knew I worked there a week or two, and they knew that I was a striker. So they fired me. So finally, I had to go and work. They used to have small lace, so they cut garments to make them in, you know, private home. So I would work for these people and take the garments home and work home. And I think they showed how people carry their coats on their head. Well, and then in 1905, my father worked. Of course, I had my father and my brother. And my brother is dead now, one after me. And we had a friend of ours stayed, and we had three little rooms, and we lived in those three rooms. And I had to get up in the morning, make lunch for them, make bread and breakfast and make lunch for myself, and come home at night and make supper. And after supper, I brought home some work to make some do some work after supper. See? That's what I do. So, like you say about my mother, well, again, my mother lived in Riga for a while, Russia.
Is that Latvia or Estonia?
Latvia, it's Riga. And my aunt, her and my mom's sister, was a cook there, a big house. So once in a while we'd go over there to see a place where she invited us to see them. So they had, on the wall, they had all the big copper pans and all the little things that were hanging there, all the dishes and all that. So my mother said, and that's a philosophy coming in. My mother says, look, so many people haven't got pans to cook in, and look at that, they have so many pans hanging on the wall. Isn't that a philosophy? See? So a lot of things. And my mother always used to say, as young as I had her, I do a mensch. You understand
I
that?
I didn't understand the beginning.
My mother used to say, you know, that somebody didn't treat you right, that you shouldn't take them. At the end of the hazard, if that fellow, the other man is, the other person is a pig, you be a human being, a mensch. See, now that's a philosophy, see? And there is a lot of things like that that came from my mother.
Now, when you came to the United States then, you organized and talked in mainly in English because you lived in England or still
English,
mainly in
English. English, well, because they were saying that Jane Addams used me as a translator, their language, English. And I was always in the English, English organizations, and I learned how to read and write. English, not Jewish. I don't know how to think. I don't know how to read Jewish. But then it's my favorite language. Yeah. So what did you start talking? So I was here. I want to say the,
yes, I was mostly, because I had to talk English.
Yeah, but I couldn't read English. So I was a monk saying English organization mostly. And about 6 years ago, about 3 years before I came here, I joined the Jewish Labor Committee. You know who they are, don't you? Yeah. I joined the Jewish Labor Committee. And I said, when I joined there, I said at a meeting, and they hadn't written their minutes. Wir haben Syrien gekommen zu meiner Jüdischkeit. I came back to my Jewishness. And by the way, I read an article today in the
this small track also summer of Jewishness.
The remembrance of Max Nordoff. He was also like somebody like me, and finally he came back to his Jewishness. See? So they made it like a note of it when I came back to my Jewishness. So that was really about that.
But as you were in your younger years then in Seattle and in Chicago, you weren't involved in Judaism, you weren't Orthodox yourself?
No. No.
Did you consider yourself a socialist at this time?
Well, I tell you, personally, at one time in the early 90s, anarchism was like in Chicago, I was an anarchist.
Did you know Emma Goldman and Alexander
Voltaire? Sure, Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman and all of them, yeah.
Do you have any recollections of Voltairine de Cleyre?
Of the what?
Voltairine de Cleyre.
Sure.
I'd like to, so next time maybe, I'd like to ask you more about her.
Yeah, she was a wonderful person. And when we were in Seattle, we wanted her to come to Seattle. She was in New York, I think. And she refused. She says, no, because if I am got to come at the expense of you poor workers. She wouldn't come. She said, I'd love to, if I had my own money. So you see, that is, oh yes, I need a more burden in the world.
Were you involved in the IWW free speech fights on the West Coast then?
Well, I was in, I paraded in the Meyer Highway telephone strike, and what's his name, a few other others, I was involved, we paraded in the streets in San Francisco.
But you were never arrested for the IWW and the anarchist free speech fights then?
No. But then I was a little bit early out of it because I took part, I too, but I wasn't very active in it because I was already married and I had two children. And so.
And did you leave anarchism then and become a socialist?
Yeah, then I, then I left anarchism and we joined the, as I said, first I was a socialist, then I was an anarchist, because the socialism weren't doing enough. They were doing it, but not enough. They were afraid. And years pictures I had them all, and I was in organizations and all that. And then, of course, when I moved up to Seattle, Washington, the IWW was active, and in Seattle, Washington, the union was active, quite active too. So that's, and here is my plaque that I got just not long ago for my union. This one here. This one I got when I was 18, the first one. Mm-hmm. And this is what I just got now.
But you kept your socialist affiliations all throughout that
yes,
period?
Yes, so. I've never dropped them.
Then you left Seattle in right around the time of the First World War, was that it?
No.
When did you leave Seattle then?
I left Seattle in 1917, 1918, somewhere around there.
You were married again then?
I was married then, yes, I was married, and it was right after the Russian Revolution, my husband's brother was quite active, he was an anarchist, and he was quite active. They sent for him to come to Russia, and he came to Russia, and they put the diamonds of the crown, of the Russian crown, in his heels, and they sent him to America to sell those diamonds and to bring his brother, that was my husband, to bring his brother over there. That was in 1918. And if my husband went to Russia, I had to sign for it. I had to sign for his going because I should not become a public charge on the county. So he went there. He was there about 8 months, and he was a little bit disgusted the way things were going then.
Was he an anarchist then?
That time anarchism was, it was more of a humanist. Humanist like that. And anything was good for the human being, or for the progress of the human being, that's what we're involved in. And when he saw the way they acted in Russia, he didn't like it, he came back here. And he came back, I was in New York, when he went to Russia, we went to New York, and so we lived in New York for a while.
Were you working there then?
No, we had money, enough money, but. And I had my two children, and we lived in the Bronx for a while. when they came back and then went back to Seattle again. So, so that's why they'll say I've been always involved in all kinds. And then in 1960, I think it was, when they had the centennial for the Jane Addams. I had lost track because, you know, I got involved in moved around and got involved in the trade unionism and all that. I'd lost track of Jane Addams, what she was doing. And then when I saw in the paper they were announcing that they were at the CNC in Los Angeles, they were announcing the centennial. The centennial of Jane Addams, I got interested and I wanted to know where, wow. And I searched everywhere, I called up the papers to find out who and how and where I could get in touch with them. Finally, this woman, Aurella Barfield, she was in, I got in touch with her and she told me where we would meet, and we would go. We went out to Sophie Gordon's place, way out in the hills somewhere, and there we celebrated the centennial of Jane Addams. Well, at that time, Mrs. Linus Pauling, do you know them?
Mm-hmm.
Linus Pauling, she spoke about Jane Addams. And she says, well, I don't suppose any of you are here that knew Jane Addams. And I says, point of correction, Chairman. She says, what's the point? I said, I knew Jane Addams. And since then, I became involved then again in
the International League for Peace and Freedom.
Yeah. Got involved, and since I'm there, I've been quite active in that.
Well, so that your re-involvement with them is very recent then, with the Women's International.
1960. Uh-huh. Yeah, but I've been, you know, I've been. So now, about a month ago, I was 90. I was 90 the 1st of January. So they made a little tea, an honor and tea, and they took a picture of me. And that's a picture they put an orchid on me, and they put a badge of Vietnam on me. So this was a picture.
Now, were you involved? I want to ask a few questions about before you left Seattle. Were you involved in the anti-war activities in the First World War then?
No, I don't think I was, because in the First World War, I think we lived up in Seattle, Washington. 1940 was it?
And the United States didn't become involved until 1970.
Well, I tell you, so, but in 1919, my youngest son was born, and we were quite active in Seattle. When I come back to Seattle again, we were quite active in Seattle. We organized the revolution.
The general strike?
Huh?
Were you there for the general strike?
Sure. Yeah, I was in the general strike. You see, I was in there, you go. And we had organized a cooperative store, and that was only for members. Everything else was cut off. But we allowed electricity for the hospitals. But everything else was shut off. And in 1919, and I was in a big belly, ready to explode. I remember walking down Yesterway Hill, by the hill to walk downtown. Of course, there were no cars, nothing was running. So that was in 1919. We were involved in that very much, in that strike there. And so, right along.
Now, were you also involved in the women's movement and the feminist movement in those early years?
Yes.
The struggle for the vote and all of that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And anything when it came up to any kind of, well, the Women's League were involved in that, you know, very much. And here's a book I just got lately by, was sent to me, I don't know if you've seen it, but it was sent to me by a friend of mine. And he knew me, this man, one of them, this was also, one of them had an article in there, in 51, Sam Berman. And his parents knew me, and he bought an awful lot of money. Here's what he writes in the card. Called Sister Becky.
In the women's movement, were they in Seattle? Were you involved in the marches or anything there?
No, in Seattle I was not involved because at that time in Seattle and we, I say, was mostly in the strikes. Mostly in the strikes. Mostly in organizing unions. I was involved in that most of the time. And you read that all this, I marked up all these people and how I worked with them and like, well.
Were you involved in the women's struggle then? Earlier with that? In the women's struggle. Was that earlier?
Well, the women's struggle, when Jane Addams, you know, in 1904, 1905, 1906, and right along, or whatever there was, whenever there was a chance, but I had two children and I had to make a living. I left my husband in 1931. And that's since 1931 I've been alone, you see. And I had a house struggle with my husband, too.
Now, was your second husband also involved in the labor movement?
Yes, he was somewhat sympathetic. He was a writer. He used to write for the Forewords, and he wrote for the Voice here for a while. And then, of course, he was also in that. He was a junk peddler. He's in Seattle, Washington. He's a junk peddler. Then in San Francisco, we had a cleaning store.
Yeah. Now, so you left Seattle shortly after the general strike then?
Yeah.
And you came to Los Angeles or to San Francisco?
We came to San Francisco, and then we went to Los Angeles. And, oh, I didn't like that. I can't keep collecting them all. But,
What were you doing then? Were you working in the needle trade still then?
Oh, yes. Oh, mm-hmm. Working in the needle trade. Yeah.
And at what point did you join the Amalgamated then?
Well, I'm telling you, I joined the Amalgamated even before. I came back here in 19. I was up in Seattle. I was up in Seattle, Washington. And I left my husband in Oakland in 1931. Then I went out to a place called Home Colony. To me, it's Seattle, Washington. They had some friends there. And they helped us make a living, me and my children. My oldest son, he worked for somebody in the prison on board. I had a little picture. I had a little place. On the beach, I paid $2 a month for about two rooms, and I lived there. And I had a sign out sewing shop, and someone would come in and want to have a button sewn on or something, a charge of a nickel or something like that. That's the way I made a living. You see.
Now, how about in the 20s? What were you doing? That was in the 30s, though.
Yeah, that was
now, 30s. What about in the 20s? What were you doing?
In the when?
In the 1920s.
Oh, in 1920, I was still living with my husband. We were here in Seattle, in Los Angeles.
Now, were you working then,
No, I wasn't working a shop, but I worked with my husband. He had the cleaning store, you know. And so I'll say, but in 1931, when I left my husband, so that was during the
panic, the terrible. I went up to Seattle, Washington, and up there in this colony, near Seattle, Washington, home colony, they called it.